again, I don't want to completely demonize, say, these teenage boot camps. I'm sure there are some people trying to do good work. There are prison guards trying to do good work. There are border guards who even save people's lives at times, and they're decent people. Yet these structures have a tendency to create these situations where people are very vulnerable, and the job itself can affect people's psyches and create this, you know, habit of domination, really.
And, I've seen that firsthand. There is a example. Sheriff's departments, often a county jail is run by a sheriff's department. The employees of the county jail versus the employees who are in the sheriff's station, the deputies who ride around and patrol, it's almost the difference in the mindset and the culture of those two groups is just astounding. The ones who are in charge of confining people really internalize that. I don't think you can do that to people without it affecting both the person being in prison and the person who's doing the imprisoning. I'm not trying to say that there are some people that we just can't let run loose. I'm not saying that there are some people that could cause a great amount of harm. I'm only saying that yes, this mindset is very, very different between even the two, even a single county sheriff's department. You'll see it.
Yep. And, you know, they internalize the stuff, you know, intimate to that setting, and then they, you know, they seek rationales, and I think they're very susceptible to suggestions from the people who are, you know, again, from the right-wing media saying what a threat the immigrants allegedly are, never saying a kind word about them. This is pure dehumanization. So let's not talk about how they do little things like pick our food. You know, we never give thanks to these people in the fields, busting their backs, basting in the sun, often in fields saturated with toxic pesticides and herbicides, but they're doing it, and they're all sorts of important work. We don't give thanks. It's just, again, this narrative of they're bad. And I think it's to keep people who find themselves in this system, you know, give them a justification for what they know is unjust.
Well, another aspect of that, too, is, of course, if a person is in a prison situation where parole might be something that's coming up in a few years, of course, the report of the prison, of the prisoner's conduct, is all very much taken into account at the parole meeting. And so obviously the person who holds the key to give you a good or bad report has a huge amount of control, and for abuse or sexual coercion, we need to rethink this. It's just not, we really do.
People like Angela Davis, they've been speaking about this for decades, and they seem to be getting a little louder and more allies each year. Hopefully it will reach a tipping point. There's a guy, there are a lot of people working on prison reform issues for sure. There's a great movie coming out regarding this issue, Beyond Borders. And just
interesting, I've not heard about that one. It seems to me there's a website called that too. I wonder if it's released by them.
Maybe. And speaking of good movies, I wanted to mention I discovered Logo recently.
Yes.
The channel? Okay.
Yes, I'm aware of the channel, but I had to give up television. It was making me homicidal, so I got rid of the dish and the television and everything's on the internet. But I do a lot of Netflix. But I do recognize Logo as being one that is very progressive.
It's very gay oriented, actually. You know, gay dramas. They had some sitcom sort of stuff that usually doesn't appeal to me in any genre, really. any variety. I don't know, they can be okay. But anyway, they happen to be showing a show, a movie, a documentary on Bayard Rustin, who is a civil rights activist, very close to Martin Luther King and all of them. And he was openly gay, and he got all sorts of grief for that. And I thought of him when you were talking earlier about the umbrage some people take when it suggested that there are parallels between the gay rights movement and the earlier civil rights movement. And I think that's
interesting. They did a documentary about that. I think he worked with King very closely, and I believe wrote some of his speeches. It was a very close situation.
Yeah, it's called Brother Outside. And then there's a subtitle to it that I don't remember. I looked for it on the web to see if there was DVD out. I can't find anything, but I'll keep an eye out. But he very much felt, you know, he saw the similarities. I mean, no, it's not the exact same thing. It's a different struggle. It's a struggle nevertheless, and it's a right struggle. And there's this division between, you know, people advocate the one and, oh, how dare you say that's similar? It's one of those created divisions, you know. And Bayard Rustin, he actually just died about, he lived like till he was 80. And he traveled a lot and, you know, just trying to teach peace all over the world. He got to Africa several times. And you were talking about that effort to legalize interracial marriages. You were talking about the Loving case?
Yes.
Okay. I learned recently that Alice Walker, the author, she married an Anglo-Jewish guy. And when they got married, I think in the 60s, theirs was the first legal interracial marriage to take place in Mississippi.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
That's an interesting story. And your reference to the issue regarding some people being very unwilling to compare what black folks went through and what LGBT folks are going through, the ones who take great issue with that and great exception. That's one of the things that came up when the Congress was going to strip off the transgendered from the LGBT INDA bill, because it seems that this country has a very short memory, and we don't always go back for our wounded or the people who suffer. We have our rights and we move along, and nothing else really matters. A very short memory, and there's a lot of concern about that and dropping them.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, where we would be so much powerful if, you know, solidarity, you know, recognizing our shared interests. Again, there are always these efforts constantly to create these divisions between people. The FBI, actually, they were real clear about their tactics and their agendas. They had these, you know, some of their documents get released every now and again, and their counterintelligence programs, and do whispering campaigns to start divisions between communities that would be powerful allies. And, you know, floating stories in the media or wherever they can, having people within groups, infiltrators, within groups telling stories, agitating people against others.
Black ops.
We had that was pointed out in that movie, the Michael Moore film, Fahrenheit 9/11. And he did that story about the Quaker peace groups having somebody visit them, and it was revealed that he was an agent.
Yes. That was so. I just can't imagine how any intelligent organization would worry about the Quakers. I'm just appalled. Are they not busy enough? Do they not have enough to do? It's like going to the PTA and infiltrating that.
Well, they've got a lot of people that put on different tasks, that's for sure, keep them busy. And we don't even know what the budget of the CIA is, but it's been estimated about $50 billion. And I remember when I was in college, the CIA recruiters were always around, and I think there was even a time I was considering it. You know, I was just kind of curious. You know, I had worked for the Census Bureau before, and, you know, you're looking at all these bills and debts and whatever. And not to demonize those institutions either. I mean, you know, there are elements of them that broke up, you know, mafia gangs and stuff like that. And there's some working on human, you know, sex trafficking rings and stuff like that. So it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think people sometimes, it can paralyze us. We get very, you know, concerned and just creeped out by the notion that phones are being tapped and stuff like that. We get concerned, you know, what does this mean regarding our jobs and how far does this go? You know, Bob has mentioned maybe there's like an Agent Fred listening while he does the show. And I wouldn't doubt it. I've gotten to the point where I expect that kind of stuff.
Yes, I believe Bob mentioned last evening that the Head On Radio Network site was hit several times, or at least looked at a number of times. Was it the CIA or the NSA or Halliburton, one of them, Bob mentioned last night. And of course, yes, they do. One has to be a little bit concerned about all of that, because in the case of, well, there was a library that recently sued, saying that they were not going to tell the names of the books that a person had checked out because they weren't allowed to tell the person. And there are internet companies, too, that have refused to turn over records of websites visited. But those are few and far between. Normally, it's like AT&T. They just turn it all over. Whatever you want, here you go. And then you have the Bush fighting for immunity. The country, I don't recognize it anymore, Preston. I really don't. It's not the America I intended to grow up in.
Yeah. You know, since you mentioned the phone companies turning over the records, there was one company that did not, and that was Quest, I believe. And coincidentally, and Quest is based here in Denver, actually. And coincidentally, the head of Quest, Joe Nocio, was pulled up on some charges of, you know, dumping his stock too soon and making a bunch of money, or, you know, having information and then dumping his stock before the value of it crashed. He was convicted of it too, which is so rare in these corporate crime things.
Well, yes, that's very rare.
You know, usually you're promoted, hey, he's an exec, he worked hard, and the free hand of the market decided that he should shove all your tax dollars into his pockets as fast as he can. Of course. Well, Nacho was pulled up on, I wonder, I don't know, the timing might not be right, but I wonder if that wasn't a punishment for him not turning over the files or something. That could be totally wrong, but I'm just speculating.
I don't think you're wrong. What we've seen in the Justice Department alone regarding firing prosecutors who didn't toe the party line, you can be sure it applies to the out people in private industry, those who are on the outs with the government. You either get in bed deeply or they're going to get you somehow.
Yeah, I noticed recently Al Franken's been getting all this negative publicity because he, it's alleged, didn't pay some taxes. And, you know, he may very well didn't, but he's probably like most of us, especially someone, you know, who has some resources and just listened to his advisors and did what his tax advisor told him to do. And yet that the right wing, he's in the middle of this campaign to unseat Norm Coleman in Minnesota, and they don't want that to happen, so they send out their minions to look through his files and his records and all that stuff, and they found a couple things, yeah, where...
Preston, did you happen to catch the article that McCain's wife is saying that she will never, 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 ever turn over her tax returns? Apparently, they've been filing separately for a number of years, and she's a huge millionaire in some real world. Did you read about that?
I did hear about that. There's a little snippet in the Denver Post today, and I caught that. And she's a good example. Now, should she have her right to vote revoked permanently? Because not only was she doing drugs that weren't hers, but she was stealing. She was breaking into something and stealing. Those were corporate drugs, the corporate pharmaceuticals. Nonetheless, she was convicted of that. Now,
wow.
She's of a different class and a different color. Yeah, people will be like, oh, she's a felon. Of course she shouldn't vote ever again. And why is she?
Wow, good point.
But yeah, that's right. And I bet she does vote. And I bet she's able to participate in a whole bunch of ways. And selling a drug herself, by the way. I mean, selling the official, one of the official, the authorized drugs, beers.
Yes, authorized drugs. Oh, Lord, that's a deep subject. There was recently with the Food and Drug Administration, there's a new, that you cannot sue a company for damages caused by a drug that may affect you in a bad way if the FDA has approved it. That absolves a corporation from all responsibility. And certainly, if an airline is supervised by the government, I'm sorry, I can't call the name, I'm getting old. But in any case, it certainly, even though they're supervised by the government, you can sue an airline if they, you know, throw your chair out the window or any number of things. It just doesn't make sense that the drug companies are protected so fiercely.
Yeah. You know, actually, I wanted to make one other remark regarding FBI, CIA, surveillance, NSA. That's an even bigger institute. There's a part of me, though, while I don't like the intrusion and snooping and all that jazz, there's a part of me, though, that, I don't know, may welcomes it, might be too strong a word, but is okay with it, accepts it, and thinks, well, if they're just flipping through my papers and looking at my books or seeing what book I checked out of the library, I'm like, I hope they explore it. I hope they really do investigate it. And who knows? You know, maybe they'll have a conversion of sorts. There are plenty of people.
That's a great perspective, Preston. That one never occurred to me.
Chalmers Johnson, he's worked with the CIA. He's a Korean War vet. He talks about blowback, and he's like a progressive force who has connections, who's been deeply involved with the CIA. Philip Agee, same thing, was in it very deeply for a long time. And when he came out, he faced all kinds of grief. George Bush, they were furious with what he was talking about. But he did it, and he went on to live a very helpful, peaceful life, building bridges. And he lived in Cuba for a long time, built this little tourism, kind of a tourism for peace organization. And so, you know, if they're, and I know for a fact, actually, that they've been surveilling me. Here in Denver, we had this kind of scandal where it was exposed that the police, you know, were keeping files on people, and they were actually forced to release their files. And I got mine and found out where all sorts of stuff they knew about me. Nothing big, just kind of where I work and where I live, what kind of clothes I wear, that kind of thing.
Even to the kind of clothes you wear. I see.
Yeah. They called me a sloppy dresser.
Like, they did they?
They must have me confused with somebody else.
That's too funny. As if that were pertinent. That's
but
just amazing.
I see we're near the top of the hour, and I want to take up all your time, but you'd mentioned Mother's Day, and I want to read a little bit about the history of Mother's Day, a couple paragraphs.
Please do. Certainly.
I looked it up on Wikipedia, and it said it started, you know, it probably goes back to these Greek and Roman, you know, worshiping the mother goddess kind of thing, Juno among them, which I thought was kind of cool, you know, with that movie that just came out called Juno.
That's I'm interested in seeing that. I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Nor have I, but yeah, I got a feel for it that it sounds good. But anyway, our current Mother's Day in the U.S., it says the U.S. celebrates Mother's Day, the second Sunday in May. Mother's Day in the U.S. was loosely inspired by the British Day and was imported by social activist Julia Ward Howe after the American Civil War. However, it was intended as a call to unite women against war. In 1870, she wrote the Mother's Day Proclamation as a call for peace and disarmament. Howe failed in her attempt to get formal recognition of a Mother's Day for Peace. Her idea was influenced by Ann Jarvis, a young Appalachian homemaker who, starting in 1858, had attempted to improve sanitation through what she called Mother's Work Days. She organized women throughout the Civil War to work for better sanitary conditions for both sides, and in 1868 she began work to reconcile Union and Confederate neighbors. When Jarvis died in 1907, her daughter named Anna Jarvis started the crusade to found a Memorial Day for women. The first such Mother's Day was celebrated in Grafton, West Virginia, on May 10th, 1908.
Yeah.
I don't know if Bob's still listening, but...
Oh, yes, he's producing. He's definitely listening. That's an interesting story.
West Virginia history. And this Mother's Day proclamation that Julia Ward Howe wrote up for to protest war is amazing. I'll just read you a couple passages and then I'll let you go. She wrote, "Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether our baptism be of water or of tears. Say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands will not come to us, reeking with carnage, for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We, the women of one country, will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession, as men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war. Let women now leave all that may be left of home of a great and earnest day of council. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each bearing after his own time the sacred impress, not of Caesar, but of God." And
wow. What a beautifully written statement. And as a, by the way, Bob points out in production chat that there are actually signs in Grafton that listed, the signs say it's the home of Mother's Day in
That's
Grafton.
That's good. Glad to hear it's recognized. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I had no idea of the connection. You always bring an interesting and always beautiful aspect to the show, and we appreciate it, Preston.
It's my pleasure, and really enjoy what you're doing, and enjoy your weekend. And
thank you. I shall.
We'll be in touch.
I shall. Thank you. I hope so, Preston. I look forward to. Figured out that often when you do call, it's on Friday night, so I look forward to Friday nights for you. We enjoyed it, and thank you, Preston.
It's my pleasure. You bet. Friday's kind of my day to kick back and spend some time with some friends like this, telephone friends.
Well, don't dress sloppy now. They're watching.
Yeah, I'll try to dress sharp there.
Yeah.
Friend
we're
going to
watch.
Watching.
We're going to want pictures. We want proof. We'll post them to the site so that we'll know you're dressing well.
Okay, I'll do that. Take care, Peter. Bye-bye.
Good evening. Bye. And that's our friend Preston, who lives in Denver, who always has an interesting and very studied and compassionate view of most any topic you can go to. He's actually a brilliant man. We are at the top of the hour on a Friday evening, and I think that probably calls for a break. And actually, we have a dedication this evening. We'll use this track as a dedication for our top of the hour break. It's actually a very sad situation. The dedication goes out to a little boy from his mom and dad this Mother's Day. The young boy died tragically when he was very young of age. And so this is for Jimmy on Mother's Day from Mom and Dad.
His name was Jimmy. He wasn't very old, about 10 or 11 years since birth. But you wouldn't call life for Jimmy heaven on earth. He lived in a big town in the north part of the nation. His mom and dad had forsaken him, so he had to sell newspapers to stay off starvation. Now mom and dad loved the nightlife.
I love the nightlife. I've got to forget on the disco round. Oh yeah. Oh, I love the nightlife. I've got to forget on the disco round. Oh yeah. Please don't talk about love tonight. Please don't talk about sweet love. Please don't talk about being true.
riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And we're back for hour two of Strictly Confidential, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio show, riding across the world, indeed, on a horse named Strictly Confidential. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4 head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you can use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check it during the breaks. And I hope you enjoyed that. That particular, what you just heard was actually born in Bob's evil mind the other evening. And, of course, I couldn't let it rest. So we thank Lottie for the beginning, and I ask our friend Larry Sanders to send the extended version of Nightlife. So we put that together just quickly before the show, and I hope you enjoy it. Those of you who have absolutely no idea what we're talking about, you would have to go back and listen to Bob's show or the head on or the horn section from last night or the night. But I think it's been going about 3 days. We've had quite a lot of fun with Jimmy and the Solid State Reverb. And his parents who love the Nightlife. I'm going to be a little bit mean now, a little bit catty. I can get away with it because I'm gay. I can get away with it. Whereas some people probably couldn't get away with it. This is just so well deserved. Oh, dear Lord in heaven. There is this guy, and he is doing an announcement. In fact, an entire television show about this Homo Nomo organization called Turn Around. And you know, the Homo Nomo organizations, you know, they're countless. There's a whole myriad. Jewish people have them. All the fundies have them. You name the religion, and there's a Homo Nomo somewhere in there. But in any case, this particular program is called Turn Around. And I have to tell you, it's the gayest thing I ever heard in my life. If I practiced for the rest of my life, I could not be as gay as this guy who's promoting a program to turn you around and make you indeed attracted to the opposite sex. I mean, Blanche, please. I just couldn't believe it. This guy, I just have to run this clip. This is the gayest recovery message I have ever heard in my life. Bob, please run Turn Around.
Homosexuality will touch your life. Someone you know or love is gay. But not everybody who is gay wants to be. Happily, homosexuality can be overcome. Join us for the next half hour as we discover how on Turn Around.
Hi, and welcome again to Turn Around. I'm your host, Cy Rogers, inviting you to join us for the next half hour as we discuss one of the most controversial topics. That topic is homosexuality, but we'll be looking at it from a different perspective, a biblical perspective, here on Turnaround. Because when we do view homosexuality from a biblical perspective, we see that homosexuality can be overcome. And that's what Turnaround is all about.
I swear to you, every word of that is spoken by a man. I mean, honestly, would you go to a barber who everyone who stepped out of his shop had his hair obviously wasn't cut and it was misshapen the whole bit. I could not believe this guy, the gayest guy. They could not have found a gayer guy. In 1,000 years, this guy is not going to be straight. I guarantee you. If I rehearsed and practiced forever, I could never be. And it's okay that he talks that way. It's okay, you know. It's just fine. But honey, what are you doing? What are you doing as a commercial for a Turnaround? I just never in my life. Every word spoken by a woman. Have another audio clip about the Westboro Baptist Church. It's pretty much self-explanatory. It's some audio about Fred Phelps, and it's actually audio taken from, believe it or not, a Fox News channel. And it says that the article that goes with it is only a paragraph. So it looks like the shoe's on the other foot for Pastor Fred Phelps. Now, we heard about this a few weeks ago, that a number of people were coming together to actually protest Fred Phelps at his place, as opposed to Fred Phelps going out and annoying the populace of the country. So the shoe's on the other foot, and about 400 protesters gathered in Topeka to picket Phelps Church and all of his vitriolic remarks. And in any case, this audio is taken from Fox News 4 to give you an idea of the mood of the march. Bob, please run the Fred Phelps clip.
It was a march all about love.
I love all people, you know, black, white, you know, Hispanic, gay, straight, it doesn't matter.
Organized by a man named Love.
At first it was almost a funny thing. We were like, somebody should go protest that guy, see how he likes it. And the more we thought about it, the more like, it's not a bad idea. Let's see how this goes.
So Chris threw up the idea on a website, and 1,000 hits later, an idea turned into a rally. Make no mistake about it, though. They say this rally was all fueled by feelings for Phelps.
Hatred. Just, hatred.
Phelps, you know, he's a circus sideshow freak. He's a clown.
Small-minded. Backwards.
The absolute hardest part about being Christian is loving Fred Phelps.
And this loving group came from the four corners of Kansas.
McPherson, Kansas.
Wichita, Kansas.
Overbrook, Kansas.
Shawnee, Kansas.
As well as from some neighboring states.
Columbia, Missouri.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Folks here admit that this March of Love was just as much a march for gays as it was against Fred Phelps.
I think it's split right down the middle. I think the two almost go hand in hand.
But at noon, we will go north.
And at high noon, with a police escort on the ground as well as in the air, this group of 400 or so trumped one giant lap around Gage Park in Topeka. They carried signs of love, waved signs of love, and even sang Beatles songs of love.
I'll miss you tomorrow, I'll miss you.
All you need is love, and that old Beatles tune just might have earmarked this march.
I love everyone.
It was a wonderful clip. What fun they had. I expected the worst when I first heard there was a group going to picket Fred Phelps, but actually it turned out to be a huge party. The Gage Park that they mentioned at the very end, they were making a complete circle around with the police to protect them, is a park that Fred Phelps indicated that this is the reason he started his organization and his church, because of the fact that homosexuals gathered in Gage Park, and he wasn't having it. He just wasn't going to take it. So anyway, very proud of those people. There wasn't a lot of coverage on that nationally that I know of, but in any case, there was a protest against Fred Phelps, and you know, the comparison between Fred Phelps' hate speech and the sour and dour faces and the actual tone, the actual spirit of Fred Phelps compared to these people, it's like night and day. How could you possibly follow a man like Fred Phelps? Oh, I remember. They're all inbred. They're sisters and brothers and uncles and granddaddy cousins and daddy uncles and the whole bit gathered around him at the Fred Phelps Hate Industries. By the way, I've been looking for more news regarding the Bush Library since we talked about it the other evening and the rejection of the Methodist Church, every indication indicates is going to be final. This July, just a month or so away, I believe it was July 13th, 14th, right? We'll keep covering it. But the mainstream, excuse me, I have made a boo-boo. The for-profit media has dropped this subject like a hot potato. No one dares breathe a word about this. In fact, if you were not looking for this, you wouldn't know any of this was going on. You would have to be actually attempting to locate it. to find it. You're not going to find it out there in a place that's handy and accessible. Even Southern Methodist University's website, if you go to smu.org, the main site there, opens up with a proud banner saying it is the home of the Presidential Library of George W. Bush. It's still proclaimed. And the only news release that I have seen I've Googled it every way. I've Googled it as Google News as SMU Library and Bush Library and Methodist Bush and Methodist SMU. You can't find anything. There's only one new article that came from Dallas News, and it's from Laura. And Laura says, she said this last Wednesday, just the day before yesterday, she says, she expects to continue her effort promoting education and literacy through her husband's Presidential Library and Public Policy Center being built at SMU. She interviewed with the Dallas Morning News, and she said the plans are in flux, but she's looking forward to having the George W. Bush Presidential Library Complex showcase her activities. In fact, I believe they're going to have a Laura Bush wing where she promotes education. At least they'll have more than one book there. She says that I hope that out of the library and the Bush Institute, I'll be able to continue working on the issues that are important to me. And this is education and literacy worldwide, especially the education of girls and women in Afghanistan. Well, Laura, I think you and George just need to butt out of Afghanistan. I don't think they want to see you. I don't think they want your books, and I don't think they really want your help, and the very idea. So, nonetheless, the Dallas News. Now, this is in Dallas, mind you. This is where all of this is going on in Texas. This is news in Texas that the Southern Methodist University of the meeting in Fort Worth, the convention, the conference. Voted against it. This is known to the broadcasters, yet they let her sit there and go through this entire speech without once asking her any questions regarding its presence or where they were going to put it. I'm appalled. The for-profit media simply has no conscience whatsoever. She talks about it being not only a repository for my husband's papers, but also a salute to his life and his work and his policies. And it's going to include a museum and a public policy institute. Well, you go, Laura. You go, girl. Mrs. Bush, a former teacher and librarian and bag girl. By that I mean she's commonly known that she sold pot. Well, everybody's got a past, but boy, you and George certainly have a colorful one, don't you? She said she's spoken out on women's rights in Afghanistan, and it'll be good. It'll be good for me. It'll really be good, a good setting for me to work here on these issues at Southern Methodist University. And she's going to invite young leaders from around the world, especially those from Central European countries, trying to build a democracy. We are the most hated nation on the planet, thanks to you and your husband's friends. I wonder what young leaders would show up to learn something from this ex-bag lady, Laura Bush, the go-to girl to get your weed. And the for-profit media just sits there without a question, and lets her do it. So since the vote at SMU, there's been one clumsy statement by Bush saying that he expects to continue his library plans without mentioning the fact it was voted down. Then we have another statement from Laura. So I think basically George and Laura are the only two people on the planet who are continuing with their plans to locate at Southern Methodist University. And Lord, how I hope that doesn't happen. But there's, if not just for the Methodists, for all of it, as a country, we just really need no more endorsements of that cesspool that we call the George W. Bush regime. Speaking of weddings, which we weren't, Uruguay, for crying out loud, Uruguay became the first nation in Latin America to marry a gay couple. This just never ceases to amaze me. You know, here we are, the land of the free, and you got to look to Uruguay. And there was a civil union between a fellow named Adrian, 38, and his partner, who is 67. And it sounds like a September or December, June wedding, but in actuality, they've been together for 14 years. So they met when they were younger. And not that there's anything wrong with a 38-year-old and 67-year-old. I'm sure they know what they're doing. They know how to drive between the lines. So in any case, congratulations to those folks. I didn't want the evening to go by without me telling you about this. It's fairly short. In fact, there's a number of things we haven't gotten to this week that are fairly short, but I want to get out to you before the weekend rolls around. You can find out more information about this at the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, and that is IGLHRC.org. Again, that's IGLHRC.org. What you'll find there is a rape case in Peru. This organization is attempting to have it investigated. A young man, I've seen his picture, a delightful young man, 26 years old, I saw a short video clip of him, was repeatedly raped in February by three police officers. They sexually assaulted him because he is gay. About a month ago, a magistrate ordered that the officers be remanded into custody, which is very unusual in Peru. But instead of that happening, and instead of the police force suspending them, what they did was they kept them on and began paying for their attorneys. The police station, the police force is not suspending them. They're paying for all their legal advice. What happened was he was arrested. He was taken to the police station by three officers because they thought that he was a homosexual. They took his money, they took his belongings, and they later ripped his clothes off and raped him, forcing him to submit to a variety of different sexual practices. He was left naked the entire night, and at 6 in the morning, the officers returned his clothes and pushed him out on the sidewalk. The police have said that they did that because he was gay. I just don't quite get it. I guess that there's just not enough gay people down there, and that these police officers just go nuts when they finally find one and just have to have sex. It's some sort of like insects or animals. It's like rutting, I suppose. But you know, rape by any other name. In any case, that's information about that, and they would like you to write, and you can do it by email, the authorities in Peru, to indicate to Peru that this is, in fact, not just the information about this is spread beyond the country of Peru. Again, it's the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission. You will find them at IGLHRC.org, and on that homepage you'll find the complete story about this and who to contact. Oh Lord, a long time ago we talked about the United Nations and something called a non-governmental organization that is associated with the United Nations. It's called an NGO. By the way, we've moved to a different story. I just keep up. I may not tell you we've changed stories, but just keep up. In any case, we talked about an NGO. Actually, is a group of people who can. They're not allowed to vote at the UN. They are allowed, however, to hand out information or packets of information in the lobby to people who are members of the UN,
and they are allowed to quietly sit and listen. They are not allowed to say anything. So it's a non-governmental organization. It's a very quiet thing. And LGBT groups from various countries have been taking part in that for quite some time. But groups from Spain and the Netherlands and Brazil have been refused that observer status. There are countries here, China, Egypt, Pakistan, there are voting no, not allowing them to join the other UN NGO LGBT representatives who are allowed to go there. Why do you want to be there? Well, the reason is it'll be the UN who has to take a stand on the atrocities that are going on against LGBT folks in other countries. The nature of this, though, is, and the reason I bring it up, is the questions. You see, during the very limited meetings they have where they say no, the LGBT folks cannot come, the members of the groups, the human rights folks from the various NGOs, are repeatedly asked about pedophilia and the relationship between homosexuals and children, and then you know, that gets voted down, and then it comes back again, and it's always about homosexuality and children. The UN seems to be obsessed with it, or at least some UN members. They are very stubborn in attempting to put obstacles in the way of the LGBT groups just to go as an observer. You know, we've made so much progress, yet there are so many people who still believe the same old lines. Now, you can find out more about this at another website with a similar name, and I encourage you to go there. It is the ILGA.org, ILGA.org, and that is the International, let's see if I have the reference here, ILGA, yes, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, ILGA.org. So, and that's two sites with two different situations with similar names, both international, and both needing you to take a look and take it seriously. After all, that's what we are called to do. You stand up for your family. And in this case, it's our LGBT friends. You don't overlook those things. By the way, the continuing meltdown of the church due to the fact that the possibility of having LGBT pastors and the Trinity Episcopal Church of Vero Beach here in Florida agreed to separate, split with the approval of the Episcopal Diocese of Central Florida. This is over gay folks, of course. One wonders how long this will go on. There's always property disputes. It's always property disputes when groups like this was separate. In any case, the people who are remaining as the core members of Trinity Episcopal Church of Vero Beach have agreed to pay the departing members who are going to form a new church because they don't want no homosexuals in their church. So the church has agreed to pay the departing group $700,000 to help them form a new congregation. And they also get to take the church's carillon. Oh, my stars. I had to laugh over that. I mean, how petty could you get? We want $700,000 and we want the church bells. You know, and one wonders at the carillon. One wonders. You see, there's two types, of course. There's the huge for real kind that actually uses bells. I think they're molded out of brass and there's like what, something like 28 to 48 bells, and people can play. And normally they go in a church tower so that they can play various times of the day. And now, if in fact that church uses real carillons and real bells, it's going to be one hell of a construction project to take them out and move them if they're taking the carillons with them. And also one wonders if it's not an electronic carillon. You can see these things are very, 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 very expensive. So there are companies that make electronic carillons, and what it is basically a synthesizer, and it's the synthesizer capable of
emulating various types of bells at various bell frequencies, and it has a big power amplifier, and it sits up in the church tower with big horn speakers. So one wonders if they're petty enough to want to take an artificial carillon, or if they're brazen enough to ask the church to have a construction team in it and take these very heavy assemblies down. I'm not laughing at the Episcopal Church. I mean, look at what the Methodist Church is doing with George W. Bush and that cesspool. But my star is that the church is, it's like the country. It's just in one hell of a mess, is it not? And then we have the pastors screeching that we need to go, kill, kill, kill. We get off on it. Lord have mercy. Let's see what other stories we might cover this evening. We have a gay dance floor, which we're going to run in just a few minutes. But I'll tell you this story. Phyllis Schlafly, you remember. She's the anti-gay activist that is fighting tooth and nail against the LGBT community with a gay son, I might point out to you. She spent much of her life in a crusade, yes, an absolute crusade, to get rid of opportunities for millions of people, including many of the students at Washington University. This is in St. Louis, I believe, Washington University. And yes, St. Louis. In any case, this university, Washington University, is about to honor her with an honorary degree. Now, she doesn't need an honorary degree. She's already graduated from the university, I think, with 2 degrees. Somewhere in here they're listed. Doesn't much matter. They might as well be degrees in hate, because that's what she does. She has a long history of attacking LGBT folks and children who are... She's very much against having any sort of gay-straight alliances. She has formed the Eagle Forum. If you've heard of that, it's a rabid anti-LGBT group and anti-feminism. And she also attacks schools and libraries for their any positive portrayal of LGBT folks in either their library or their curricula. Many of the it reminds me of Southern Methodist University. The faculty is up in arms. They're just blown away. The faculty is saying things like it's grossly inappropriate for Washington University to honor her with a degree, and the students are up in arms about it. You know that people in the past who have received, people like Jesse Jackson, Julian Bond, Madeleine Albright, people who actually, why not give them an honorary degree? But Phyllis Schlafly, what is going on with the universities? Just can't quite wrap my head around it. But it never seems to stop, does it? Oh, by the way, we've all seen so many wonderful stories about the Duggar family. You know, the Duggar family that has so many children that they don't know what to do. What was it, 18, 19 children at this point? They've been on TV, and they're sweet, and they're heartwarming, and the family, they raise 17 children, and each child has its own little job, and there's nothing wrong with that, and they homeschool all the children. But I just wanted to point out to you that these people are rabidly conservative. They're givers to many organizations that are rabidly anti-gay. Focus on the Family, the Family Research Council, Bob Jones University, for crying out loud, where they probably get the curriculum to educate these children because they're homeschooled. They're also very much a supporter of Bill Gothard, who's which they follow him, by the way, because he's so anti. He has a website called, and I'm not lying, Quiverful. Yes. Quiverful. And you need to use your quiverful to make more children. You figure it out. Which is one of the reasons these folks have so many children. I think she spent, 17, or what was it, 14 years of her life, I believe, pregnant, if you added up all the kids together. There's nothing wrong with that. But the reason I bring this up is, you know, out of 17 children, I believe that's their total. They just pushed out another one. Out of 17 children, you know, one of these kids is bound to be gay. I mean, it just statistically, and even if you look at all the research, like, you know, having older brothers and makes it more likely that, you know, about the hormones, and it's all very complicated. We've talked about it in the past. I don't want to get into all that scene. But anyway, it's it just seems to me that it's very, very likely that one of these children, just statistically, will be. And, you know, God help them growing up in a family like that. But, you know, it will be a wake-up call to them if we hear about that in the future. They are conservative Baptists, and they endorse Quiverful. I so want to make jokes about Quiverful, but I'm restraining myself and the teachings of Bill Goddard. So I just wanted to let you know there's another aspect to this lovely little family that has been on television with their bouncing babies recently. Not that there's anything wrong with having bouncing babies. I just wanted you to know what was going on the other side of that coin. Let's see if there's something else I can fit in here that I've been... Ah, yes. Just quickly, Verizon. Verizon has rolled back, going to amend Verizon's communications written equal employment policy to explicitly prohibit it, discrimination based on gender identity, and it was voted down. The shareholders voted it down. The backers of the plan say they were encouraged by the support it got and that they hope to bring it up again next year. In any case, that takes a certain amount of percentage of the shareholders and the voters, et cetera, et cetera. But I just wanted to let you know that not only is Verizon the most hated internet service and telephone company on the planet, I say this based on what I see in the chat room. I don't have Verizon here, but I certainly see the people who... You say Verizon, and they're like, slowly I turn, step by step, closer and closer. I just want you to know that Verizon has again voted down a discrimination policy based on gender identity. Inquiring minds want to know. We have a different sort of gay dance floor this evening. This particular gay dance floor. Let's see here. Where are we? This would be in this section. There we go. The gay bar across the street is Freeman. Name is Freeman. And his name is Stephen Freeman. Here we go. I have the reference now. Stephen Freeman is not someone we've had on the show. I've asked the various DJs. I sent out an email today. If anyone knows how to get in touch with him, or he may not be with us any longer. I don't know. But a very long time ago, on a label called Hot Tracks, which is a remix service, Stephen Freeman did a remixed set called Attack of the Disco Queens, and it's particularly fabulous. I always like to call it Attack of the Killer Disco Queens, just because it's fun to put it that way. But in any case, he's done a lot of work in DJing over the years. And in fact, this particular cut, this particular Attack of the Disco Queens set is the only, it wasn't on a, Hot Tracks, you see, is a remix service, so it wasn't on a real, quote, label, so to speak. It is the only remix that has ever made it into the dance record charts that was not pressed on a real record company. So it was one that came out of nowhere, and one that even today is still very entertaining. So Stephen, I don't have much information on you, but I would love to have you on the show. You're one of the pioneer DJs from back in the day. So Bob, let's gather up our belongings and wander over across the street. We'll take our umbrellas and our coats and jackets, and we'll have a good time.
Across the alley was the Paradise Dance Hall. Evenings in spring, they'd open all the doors and windows and the music would come outside. Sometimes they'd turn out all the lights except for a large glass sphere that hung from the ceiling. It would turn slowly about and filter the dusk with delicate rainbow colors.
I guess you could see now why it's called Attack of the Disco Queens and why I like to call it Attack of the Killer Disco Queens. That is Mr. Stephen Freeman from back in the day, a remix done on Hot Tracks. And Stephen, we'd love to have you on the show if you are anywhere around on this planet. That was done by turntables and real vinyl and reel to reel. That was quite a ride. Thank you, Stephen. I've always enjoyed that track. Need to let you know that we've heard from our friend Hank Steinhauer. Hank has, I had requested that he send us some additional music so that he could, we could have him in the dance floor, the gay bar across the street. And in fact, I got a note from Hank saying that he has indeed sent out some new CDs. Hank is the DJ we introduced and interviewed from Miami, and we've only played one of his sets because we didn't have enough of his music, but he's kindly sent some more along, and so I'm looking forward to that next week. Thank you, Hank. Want to let you know that tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. we'll have the Rick Smith Show. Rick is from Pennsylvania and is one of our newest hosts. I think this will be the second week that he has run. That's the Rick Smith Show at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on strictly on the Head On Radio Network. Also at 9 p.m. we have Mr. Billy Shears, who is one of the most wonderful and experienced men on the planet when it comes to news. I had a quote here I noted earlier in the day. One of our chatters was telling a new chatter about Billy Shears' show, and she said, "Billy plays 3 hours of music that clears your mind and soothes the soul. He covers all," and all is in all caps, "he covers all kinds of music," and indeed that is absolutely true. There is no horn section this evening. Our friend John in Australia is actually already into his Saturday, so we will not do that this evening, but we will be back tomorrow evening with programming on the Head On Radio Network, Rick Smith, followed by Billy Shears. So in closing, I want to thank the chat moderators and the news ninjas who are in constant pursuit of the truth and without which we could not do. And in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you too.